And now, this is Announcer Guy.
Okay, I've always wanted to do that. But this is Tom Reber from the Strong Printer Podcast. And this episode, I talk with James Breeze, a former athlete, snowboard guide, and undercover police officer in the United Kingdom. James is the founder of Strength Matters, a worldwide organization with this simple mission: to empower people with the skills to change lives and make the world a fitter, stronger, and healthier place. In this episode, we talk about the number one activity needed to build a strong business, how to find problems to fix for your ideal clients, how James has managed to build a team of the best and brightest minds in the fitness industry, and we also talk about high-speed car chases throughout London. If you're digging this episode, please, please subscribe to it on iTunes and leave us a review to tell people what you think of it. So, enough yapping at the mouth here. Let's motor hard with Strongpreneur James Breeze. Keeping an eye on you and what you're doing with your businesses and how you market your business, and it really got my attention over the last several months. And when I started this podcast, you were on my short list of people that I knew I needed to have on, just because of the way I see you doing things. Would you mind, sharing with us in your own words about things that might be important for us to know about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers, Tom. Really appreciate you having me on the show. It's kind of nice being on the other end of a podcast for a change and not be doing all the executive stuff with our podcast. So yeah, it's kind of nice being the interviewee, so to speak. So yeah, no, sure. My name is James Breeze. I'm very much British. Well, I'd like to say I'm Welsh. I'm from Wales, which is a little country just next to England. So when everyone asks usually, are you from London? I say, no, I'm from Wales. A random fact about me is that my first language is not English. It's actually Welsh, this crazy little language, which is one of the oldest languages in the world, and spoke only in Wales and somewhere randomly in South America and Patagonia at the same time. So I'm from Wales originally. I've come into business in a very roundabout kind of way. My background was for a sporting career. I was all geared up, ready to go and play professional cricket, our version of baseball over here in the UK, and rugby. And then, lots of injuries and me not being fit enough, fast enough, or strong enough to get into the professional sport arena ended up me going to university. So I went to university, studied French and German for 4 years, lived abroad for a couple, went back and ended up doing a master's in computer science because I just had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And that was kind of it. Then one thing led to another. I ended up going and living in Austria for 2 years because, again, following university and spending 5 years over here, which is a long time over here compared to most other universities, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I know I wanted to be active and help people and be involved with the world and just make it a better place, but I just didn't know what to do. So I ended up doing snowboarding for 2 years, working as a snowboarding guide in Austria. And then I had an epiphany moment where I ended up coming back and joining the police force here in London and spent 7.5 years working there.
So you're on the side of a mountain guiding people down on a snowboard and you wake up and you say, I'm going to go be a police officer.
It was actually quite funny. It was during my second season. And I did the first season and it was great. I loved every minute of it. I had the summer season out there doing mountain biking and stuff too. And the second season I'm loving this. This is great. It was like one of the best years of snow ever. And then I had it was kind of mid-February. It was kind of busy, but at the same time, it was the perfect snow season over in Austria. It's we had a couple of bluebird days with heavy snowfall and I was guiding a group of police officers from London, and I just got on with them really well. I heard all their stories and what they were saying and what they were up to, and I heard the good stuff, some of the bad stuff, mostly the good stuff, what was happening. And I thought, you know what, that's me. I fancy doing that. I fancy going involved and being involved with all those car chases and chasing people down and, being a bit of Bruce Willis from Die Hard and, that sort of thing. And that's what I did. I literally filled in my application form, and next thing I know, 6 months later, I'd been accepted, and I started working in the Metropolitan Police Force in London.
And how long did you do that?
I was there for 7.5 years, and technically, I'm still involved with the police. I'm on a career break at the moment, which I'm due to go back in a couple of years if I choose to or choose not to. But 7.5 years, I did it in Brixton, which is right in central London. I chose it for I always like a challenge, and Brixton is very well known for its diverse culture and has one of the highest knife and gun crime statistics in the whole of Western Europe. So I thought, you know what, let's go in there, let's go and get in there and get stuck in from the start, see what happens and go from there. So I ended up doing it for 7 years. I did 2 years as on the beat as a police officer, and then I went down the specialist routes of going into the Drugs and Firearms Task Force, and then the driving courses and specializing in the riot policing, which is it was great.
All right, so I have to ask you a question. One of my fantasies, one of my bucket list items, is to get in a car chase in a parking garage. Did you ever do that?
I never got in a chase in a parking garage. However, we used to have towards the end, we'd have at least a car chase a week or something. But it's quite funny. If a car chase in central London lasts more than 30 seconds, you're doing well, because it's crazy, because it's so busy and so tight and so narrow. What happens is they usually crash within a couple of seconds. And it's like you see all these chases in the films and how it lasts for like minutes and hours on end going on. But in reality, they only last for a couple of 30 seconds at most, but they're the best 30 seconds of your life. I can guarantee you that.
Nice adrenaline rush. Definitely. So, absolutely. So you, right now you're the founder of Kettlebell Fever and Strength Matters.
Absolutely.
Two different companies. So how do you go from, this massive adrenaline rush every day of car chases and chasing bad guys to, owning these two businesses? How'd you get started in that?
Again, completely randomly, it started when I was in the police. Like I said, I'd say the first, I'd say the 7 years I was there was brilliant, absolutely great fun. But it stemmed back from I've always been passionate about health and fitness, always loved it, loved training, loved lifting heavy stuff above my head. It was always fantastic, great fun to do. But I've always suffered from major injuries, as in particularly with my back. I've torn my hamstring a couple of times. I'd be training and going through this normal cycle of I train, injured. I'd be off for 6 weeks, come back to training, I'd be injured again, and going vice versa. And it got to the point where a couple of things happened where when I first joined the police, and I responded to a call, and it was a guy who'd actually just murdered his wife. He came around the corner, had a knife in his hand, and he went for me with a knife, and the knife hit me in my stab vest. And that was kind of like the epiphany moment for me, where I know nothing about self-defense or what I need to do if something like that was ever to happen again. So I was like, okay, so I need to do something about that. So that set me on the path to discovering Krav Maga. Krav Maga was the Israeli self-defense system. It's known as one of the most effective self-defense systems in the world. I ended up doing that, trained with that for literally 3-4 years, became an instructor. And during my time training and going out to Israel, training out there and training all over Europe, it was fun for me because it was a new, totally new challenge. I'd never done martial arts before, even any sort of fighting systems before. And I met some great people. And one of those people was a guy called Tommy Blom from Sweden, who is 6'4", the biggest friendly giant you'll ever meet in your life. But he's hard as nails. Absolutely. And we were training, and he showed me this cannonball. This cannonball with a handle on it. And he goes, hey, James, you need to check this out. This is awesome. And I watched him juggle. It was a 24-kilo kettlebell. He started juggling it up and down and throwing it all over the place like it was just like a toy. And I was like, whoa, that's awesome. Let me have a go. It kicked my ass in less than a minute. Absolutely kicked my ass. And I was like, what the hell is this? This is fantastic. That led me discovering down the path of the RKC Dragon Door, ended up doing the instructor course. And like I said, when I was in the police, I was working with some specialist units out there. And the more I trained, I saw the benefits for me, not only just with my back, my posture, my injuries are coming down. But there was another epiphany moment when I was actually chasing somebody. And with my mate Tim, who was my partner for the day that time. And Tim's a 400-meter runner. He's super quick. I never could keep up with him. But for the first time, I was keeping up with him most of the way along the chase. And it's like, what the hell is going on here? Tim said to me, he turned around and said to me, he goes, James, what the hell were you on today? And that was 6 weeks after starting training with the kettlebells. Then that was it. Did the instructor course and helped the guys in all the specialist units work with them, getting better. And then I was very lucky to, you know, realize there's a bigger, wider world. I can probably help fix myself for selfish reasons, almost, in my injuries. And I thought, let's see what it is. So I discovered FMS. I discovered all the other wonderful courses, met some great people. And the more I did the work, the more I was helping the guys in specialist units within the police. What was happening was they were becoming better and faster and less injury prone at the same time. So I did some non-official work with the guys, and the fitness guys got their times down. Like some of the guys, there's a, it's the shield run. So if you're a riot officer within the police, you have to go back and train every 6 weeks to do what's called the shield run. And you have to do like a 500 meter journey, like a run with all your full kit and everything on board. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that these times, the times, the average time to do the whole thing with the full kit was like five hundred meters in less than 2:30. And what we're doing, we got the times down to about 2:10. They're being faster. They're being quicker. And it was just a big thing, and it wasn't just one or two, it was the entire unit. And it just sent me as like, well, this is great, this is actually has a big impact. And it went from there. And so I just contacted John Duquesne from Dragon Door, said, look, people need these cannonballs with a handle over here in the UK. They need your books and products. I can't find any over here. There's no decent kettlebells. Let's see what we can do. And my dad, I grew up on a farm back in Wales, in mid Wales. It's literally in the middle of nowhere. The village I'm from is called Machynlleth. So I wouldn't try and pronounce that with your mouth full anytime at all. On that note, a random fact about Wales, which hopefully your listeners will know, is would like to know now, is that back in Wales, we have the longest train station name for anywhere in the world. It's 57 letters long.
You're kidding me. Oh my God.
It goes Llanfairpwll Gwynglychwch Gerwych yn Drobwyll yn Deseilio Gogogoch.
One more time.
Llanfairpwll Gwynglychwch Gerwych yn Drobwyll yn Deseilio Gogogoch. That is a real place. Honestly, it really is. Just type in longest train station name in the world into Google and you'll find it and bring it up.
That's awesome.
But it's like I said, we're back home. I said to my dad, Dad, I got an idea. This is, we can do this. Let's make it happen. And we did. We bought a whole load of kettlebells, bought the books and DVDs, started selling them in the UK while I was still working in the police. We bought one container and I sold out. The books and DVDs started going. And this was done without any marketing at all. There was just a demand for it over here. And what happened was like, okay, we can really make most of this. Let's see what happens. So that's when more and more people started contacting us. They got the books, they got the DVDs, but they wanted the education to go with it. They wanted to do the courses, the workshops, the personal training. And it's just snowballed from there. And then it got to the stage where if I don't make the leap from, doing this full time, I won't be able to see how far it goes. So I did it part time for 18 months, 18 months, close to 2 years. And then I realized, I can really make a big go of this. Let's see what happens. And then, I put my notice in, had a a career break from the police, put it in for 5 years and said, let's see what we do and where we go with it. And here I am today.
And how many years ago was that you
put that break in? I formed the company in November 2010. Okay. And we went trading live in March 2011. So just under 4 years.
Man, that's such a cool story. I mean, I think back to when you were talking about the first time that your buddy was throwing around the 24-kilogram kettlebell, which, yeah, for those of you that don't know what that is in pounds, it's 53 pounds. So it's, grabbing a big 53-pound cannonball and chucking it around. I remember my first experience with the kettlebell was probably right around the year 2011, and it was with a RKC instructor. The same organization you were certified through that back then. And, I've been an athlete my whole life. I've been in the Marine Corps. I've done a lot of things that are physical in nature, and nothing humbled me faster than the kettlebell did.
Yeah, totally agree.
And then on the flip side of that, you shared about how 6 weeks in you were already, running faster and you're healthier. Nothing has gotten me stronger, faster than a kettlebell.
Yep.
And I was totally sold on that as well. So would it be safe to say that if you had one, if you can only choose one exercise the rest of your life to do to stay strong and stay in shape, would it be a kettlebell swing?
Yeah, with a kettlebell swing, without a shadow of a doubt. You need, you know, literally, I was actually talking to Mark Rifkin the other day, and I said, look, you know, in my personal opinion, if you just need three implements as a man to like go and train and do anything you need a 16 kilo, a 24 kilo, and a 32 kilo kettlebell. Just have them working as doorstops in your house, and you can train with them anywhere, anytime, anything you want to do with it, and you'll be in some of the best shape in your life.
All right, so let's talk business. You know, you've got, you know, you're like, hey, the kettlebell swing, hands down, is the one exercise. Now, when you're building a business, if you had to narrow your business building activities down to one or two things, what would those be? If you could only have a couple of them.
I'd say number one, content, as in content is king. And that's what I've discovered more than anything over the last 4 years. And I came into business with absolutely zero business myself. Like, my parents weren't business owners. I wasn't a business owner. I never went to university and studied business. I was completely different. I just saw like, well, this could work and go from there. But now for me, in the last 4 years, content is king. If business owners can just do one thing, is create value by providing great content, create epic content, I think is the best way to describe it. Because the more people talk about you, everything else just starts to fall into place after that.
So we've got people that have gone to business school and they've worked in marketing for years. And then here you are, a guy with none of that experience. You come in and you seem to get it right away. Mm-hmm. In fact, before we hit record today, I know you and I were talking and I told you that. I said, you seem to get this content marketing thing at a much deeper level than most seasoned business owners understand. And what do you think that is a result of?
I think being chucked in at the deep end to begin with to see what happens. I think the biggest turning point for me was, I actually, you know, I'll honestly say this now, I think my first ever business mentor and marketing mentor was John DeCain from Dragon Door. I went and took his marketing mastermind intensive in San Diego and did it twice actually, because I thought it was that good and that powerful. And the whole weekend was about storytelling and building your story. What's your story and what's your content and how you can relate to people. And he introduced me to the book, Robert Cialdini's book, Influence. What's the full title of that book? Influence, The Power of Persuasion, along those lines, the six key psychological components to like trust-based marketing and those ideas. And it just changed my mind completely, because it made me start to realize that business is about problem solving, telling stories and problem solving. You need to do, what are you doing to solve problems? Because the more problems you can solve for people, the more you can help people. And if you don't solve their problems, then there's no business for you, because you're not going to have any money. Because people will willingly pay for services and for money if you're providing them solution for a problem they may have. So what are their problems? You know, as a marketer, as a businessman, you're a problem solver first and foremost. And you need to work out who you're solving those problems for and how you're going to do it. Because that is what, for me, is that turned the whole thing around. It's like, for example, the kettlebell. What problem is the kettlebell solving? It's solving a weight loss issue. People who have no time to work out, you can now have a workout in less than 5 minutes and it'll still get you some great results. So that's the problems I'm solving for that industry. So any people starting out in business school, it's like, how do you solve a problem? What's your problem? And what's your market's problem that you need to solve?
How do you narrow that down?
A good question. Actually, just by speaking to your audience, I think is the first thing. Like, speaking to them, say, "Look, you know, just." Well, no, I'll go back a step. Actually, defining your audience first and foremost. So, no matter what product you have, what information service you have, or anything at all, who are your audience? You need to define your audience in absolute detail. What problems are you solving for them? And like I said, you know, there's a couple of things you can do. And my mind is to get into the mindset of the person who's likely to buy it. You know, what are they looking for? You know, like I use the phrase, if I could just, a lot. So when I'm doing any sales copy or any marketing piece or trying to sell a product or course or something, I get myself and I work out who it is. So I know, for example, the kettlebell certification business, it's people in their 30s or people who buy kettlebell. Yeah, most people are in their 30s to 40s. So what problem am I solving for them? Well, the question is, if I could just ... is most of those guys now, there's two distinct markets, the fitness professional and the non-fitness professional. Let's choose the non-fitness professional first. And most people are thinking is, if I could just lose 10 pounds, if I could just lose 20 pounds, if I could just get back into my skinny jeans I used to wear, if I could just, anything, any psychological deep level rooting thinking you can think of what problem you're solving. Now that's what the non-fitness professionals think. If I could just have a challenge, if I could just get fitter, stronger, if you ask yourself, what drew you to the kettlebell in the first place? What drew you to I know you did the Strong First certification. What drew you to that in the first place? What made you switch to go, heck, I want to do that course?
Yeah. For me, it was, I've always been into kind of abnormal training type things because I get bored easily. And I love the fact that I could have one tool that would knock the crap out of me in a few minutes and that there were ballistic movements with it. Like ballistic movements. And I felt, I think the thing that initially attracted me was a combination of those things.
Yeah, well, exactly. So again, as a business entrepreneur yourself and business owner, how much time do you have to work out? Realistically, and I know you have to try and make time put in everything, but how much time do you actually have? So for example, a lot of people like drawn to the kettlebell because it's a time saver. It means they can have this handheld gym in your hand, the extreme ultimate gym in your hand, sitting as a doorstop most of the time where they can reach out to, do 10 minutes of work and get back to work straight away.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which a lot of people think about. But that's the mindset of, say, the non-fitness professional. People just want a challenge as well. People like challenges. That's how they go to. Now, if you can take that to other products and stuff, and you can really get into the mindset, particularly in the fitness industry and the weight loss industry, if you've got to get into the mindset of what people are thinking, what problems you're solving. And it could be Aunt Edna, who just wants to get back into a jean she used to fit in high school, get back into the dress for a high school reunion, that sort of thing. That's her motivation to go and do it. Now, if you take fitness professionals, for example, that's a whole different ball game. Their thoughts and their process are, if I could just survive as a personal trainer, that's one of the things they think about because it's tough. As a business owner, as we know, it's tough. The first 2, 3, 4, 5 years as well is tough for any business owner. And that, what's their mindset? They want the freedom. They want the entrepreneurial life that like Richard Branson leads, for example. So for them, the marketing with that, just that simple phrase, if I could just ... is if I could just make enough money to live my dream life, that sort of thing. If I could just, you have this tool to help more people, that sort of thing. So it just changes the mindset different to who you are. So my best advice is, yes, you need to work with people, but get into the mindset of what their problems are and how you can solve it for them.
I absolutely love your approach to that. The if I could just, I think that makes it so clear to be able to identify what those people are going through and how you can help them exactly. So now you've talked a little bit about ideal clients here.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define an ideal client for you?
The first thing you do is I've got in my office, I've got whiteboards. I've got like three whiteboards in front of me. And I like to brainstorm. So if I have an existing business, for example, the first thing I want to do is look at my best customers. Who are my best customers? Who are that 20% that keep coming back and buying more stuff off you all the time? So what I'll do is I'll list down, my three best clients. Okay, I'll list down my three best clients and I'll write down their name, their age, their gender, their occupation, their backstory, as in like, have they got family? Who have they? Are they married? Have they got kids? What are their thoughts they're going through? What are their problems and what they're trying to do? And so I create like a picture of who they are. So I'm, looking at age, sex at the same time, which is very important because different messages appeal to different markets, the gender, their home life. I like to get into the mindset of who they are and what I think. So I create a picture in my mind of who I'm talking to because I don't want to speak to a group of people in my marketing message or if I'm talking to, even though I'm talking to like thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, I want to make sure I'm just talking to one person. So if, say, for example, I know if, you know, there's, on top of my head, my best customer I know at the moment is a lady called Nancy. Nancy's in her mid-30s. She's, you know, she'll know who I'm talking about if she finds out here, but I know exactly who she is and how she thinks. And she's just a passionate fitness enthusiast who has a thirst for education. So, but I want to be talking to more people like Nancy, because in the marketing world, there's more people like Nancy, as an example. There's like, there'll be millions of people out there who think like her, act like her. So I define my very best clients. I define three clients who are my three best customers. And then from those three, I work out who my best one is. And I say best one, I don't mean it in the sense of who gets me the most money. Mm-hmm. I mean, who is the most fun to be around? Who is the most fun? Who makes my job worth coming to work every morning for?
Right.
Who are those sort of people? Because that's who you want to attract more people like you to your business and repel the people who are not going to like your business as much as you possibly can. So you need to have a balance. Like, yes, you want people to spend more money with you, but you need to attract the people who are the right fit for you and your business, who think, who have the same core values and principles that you stand by.
So when you first started out, were you creating content from day one? Because you have a team of people now, and it's obviously more than just you, but did it just start out with you by yourself and you said, hey, I'm going to start creating content? What did that look like?
Yeah, it was actually, it was solving the problems that I had when I first started doing kettlebells. I thought, well, okay, where did I learn how to swing a kettlebell first and foremost? I went to YouTube University. Okay, those videos are pretty rubbish. What do people think about when they need to buy a kettlebell? They need to know, what size do I use? What weight do I have? Where do I start training? What's the best book to buy? So the initial website I built was actually to be like an educational resource that for people to come and go to and say, hey, look, if you're new to kettlebells, come over here. This is what you need to do to get started. So my target was complete beginners, because I was a complete beginner back then at the same time. And I thought, if there's people like me who need to hear about it, well, these are the questions that are coming up time and time again from friends, family, and, you know, people who are interested. Let's try and solve those problems first and see what we're doing. So to me, it was right at the start. It was like, provide good content, basic content, because that's what it was. It's like simple things that you need to know. What size kettlebell do I buy? Do I need to wear gloves when I'm swinging kettlebells? How do I store my kettlebell? Those sorts of simple questions, that's all.
How much of your focus in content creation is education versus SEO based?
Good question. I'd say now I'm taking a big look at SEO and how you're doing it. But back in the day, I was kind of new. I kind of did a lot of, like, well, for my computer science days, I knew a basic background of SEO and stuff. But I was just fortunate. I had a network of people who I could share information with and people could come with. And there's already a pre-made audience, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I was working alongside Dragon Door. So it was easier for me, because there was already a market for Dragon Door people. And I was coming in and just piggybacking off them a little bit to get the message out there into the UK. So that was interesting. But I'd say, you know, SEO wasn't such a big importance back then, but now I'm seeing it as a huge importance going forward.
You know, I talk to people all the time that they business owners are so concerned with, you know, the SEO side of things, and they're neglecting adding value and meeting mm-hmm. needs. And
yep.
they're expecting these amazing results when, in reality, I mean, you're total proof of this, that, man, if I just continue to teach people everything they need to know about this kettlebell or whatever your product is, and I meet enough needs, you know, the business is going to grow organically through that. And then once you've built your website to the type of thing that has, you know, great content on it, then you can pay a little more attention to the SEO side of things. So
it's interesting. There's one quote, I can't remember where I heard this from. I wish, you know, this is not from me. I think it must have been a book by Dan Kennedy, actually. But he said, like, I think there's a lot of principles that I've read all of Dan Kennedy's books. I've bought a few of his products and I like him. I think there's a lot of value to what he does. I don't like everything that he does, because it's, you know, I think there's something to move on from that you can do at the same time to build a much bigger brand, so to speak. But he said the key thing, which is written on my whiteboards here, is you build a brand by selling. And I can't emphasize that enough to people. When I first see them starting out, they spend all their money on SEO. They spend all their money on brand new logos. They see that they spend all their money on t-shirts, fancy websites. You don't need to do that. You haven't got, it's that, those are for brands. Those are for companies who are turning over $10 million, $20 million, who to invest in those sorts of things. You build a brand by selling. Your focus until you get to a $10 million company, in my personal opinion, is how do you sell? And you sell by solving people's problems. The more problems you solve, the more items you'll sell, and the bigger your brand will become automatically and organically.
Love it. Love it. I have a buddy of mine, Jason, is a marketing guy, and he always talks about the importance of content on your website. He says, don't pay for a bunch of paid search and all this SEO stuff if you're going to drive the traffic to the ghetto.
Yep, totally.
He's totally. Like, you know, what good does it do to drive a bunch of people to your website when you don't have content that's engaging and educational and adds value and makes the case for why you're the expert in your industry? So man, that's absolutely good stuff. So what kind of routines, or, you know, if I'm a brand new small business owner and I'm listening to this right now, I'm going, man, I'm totally drinking the Kool-Aid James is serving up here about creating content. What does that look like in an average week? How do they fit that in when they're wearing all the different hats in their business? What anything come to mind of some advice looking back at your beginning of what you may or may not do differently that would help somebody?
Absolutely. I'd plan that out. I'd have a structure and a plan to what you want to do. Now, a lot of people, I speak to a lot of business, you know, fitness business professionals all the time. And I go out to various different conferences and try and learn and absorb as much information as I can. But the common thing I see is people fail to plan efficiently and correctly. So what happens is they'll go, right, I'm going to build a blog. I'm going to create great, epic content. And that lasts for 2 weeks. And then it stops. It just completely goes. If you're going to do something and you're going to create content, stick to it. You know, write it down, stick to what you're going to say. Like when we started our podcast, the Strength Matters podcast up, we said, right, we're going to commit to this. We're going to make sure we do a post every week for a year. And we're you know, like a podcast, and we're sticking to it. Now, you don't become the number one podcast in iTunes overnight. You don't become that in 6 months. It's going to take 3 to 4 years potentially for people to get there. But you need to stick to it and commit. So if there's any new small business owner out there and they're thinking, I need to create a blog. Okay, the first thing you need to ask yourself is, what are the frequently asked questions you get day in, day out in your business? Write a list down, make a complete list down, and then go, right, every week for the next 6 months, I'm going to write this down. I'm going to write this down, and I'm going to do a blog post about that every time.
I'm taking notes as you're talking here because this is good stuff. I want to remember stuff for my own business.
It's no problem.
It's great. So you stopped talking when I was still writing there and you caught me off guard.
Cool.
Sorry.
That's fine. Not a problem at all. And it's cool. It's one of those things. I'm one of these people that I go off on tangents all the time. So if for any of the listeners out there who are listening, and even for you, Tom, as well, I do apologize because sometimes I go off on complete tangents.
No, this is good. I mean, I believe that at the heart of building a strong business is really positioning yourself as an expert.
Absolutely.
And there are no shortcuts to that. And so when that small business owner commits to doing a podcast, commits to writing a blog or whatever, and they're doing one a week and the days and the months are passing by, mm-hmm. How do they know that it's working?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, obviously you'd like to see, hopefully the sales start to come in. But I'd say that the first thing you need to look at is like, again, this is one thing you should do from the word outset. So if you are, you know, a small business and you have a website and stuff here, make sure you have Google Analytics installed. I don't care what anyone says, make sure you have Google Analytics installed on your site so you can see if the traffic is increasing to that blog post and what's happening and where people are going around your website. That is the first fundamental thing you need to do. And the second fundamental thing I'm telling people right now is make sure you have a Facebook pixel tracker installed on every single page of your website as well. Because things are changing in the world of digital marketing completely. And what you're doing as well is, yes, everyone knows well, they should start to know that you need to build a list and you need to build an email list, and by creating great content and capturing people's emails so you can nurture them and try and talk to them a little about who you are, educating them so people get to know, like, and trust you. But the new email list builder coming forward in 2015 is the Facebook tracking pixel, where you can follow people around and you know, continue your message and your content and deliver even more content to them on an ongoing basis. And it doesn't cost that much money to market on Facebook anymore these days if you do it right and people have been to your website already.
So for people that don't know exactly what that is, can you give us another 30 seconds to a minute on the Facebook pixel?
Yeah, absolutely. So like basically your goal with any form of business or website is to attract new customers, and you need to educate them so they get to know, like, and trust you. So the traditional method is always to, you know, they come into your store maybe and you'll get the name, the details and the address, and you can send them some mailers and coupons and the post and stuff like that. The new method on digital marketing is you offer a free resource, like a free guide or free report or free video series or something, where you get to capture their email address, and over a series of follow-up emails, you get to respond to them, talk to them, and just educate them about your business. Because before people buy, they need to know, like, and trust you. Okay, and it doesn't happen overnight. Unless you've got a physical product like a GoPro, for example, where people will go, oh my God, it's brilliant, I need a GoPro for my skiing and snowboarding adventure, you're going to go and buy it. But people need to know, like, and trust you straight away to how you, as a small business owner. And that's vital, because there's a lot of competition out there. And you need to, you know, show them and explain to them why you're the expert, why you're the trusted expert, and what you need to do to move forward. Now, coming into 2015, when I talk about a Facebook tracking pixel is, now, have you ever been to a website or a shopping site where you've looked onto a specific page and then suddenly you're on Facebook and that product you were just looking at, for example, maybe on Amazon or something like that, was sitting on the right-hand column saying, hey, buy me right now. Did you forget to buy something? Buy me right now. Or maybe you went to another website where you went and had picked up something, saw something, read something, but then you come back onto the Facebook page and you see, hey, you know, some content or some piece from this particular website. That's what a Facebook tracking pixel is, because you need to understand that it usually takes up to 7 pieces of contact before someone will do business with you. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing people need to realize, and you need to follow these people around and remind them and make sure you're top of their priority. Now, I'm not saying being an unwanted pest and bombard them saying, buy me now. But guess what you could do? If people come onto your website and they're looking to buy shoes or looking to buy anything, I don't know why I chose shoes, but just use shoes as an example now. And then suddenly they didn't buy shoes at that time, but they log into Facebook or maybe Twitter later on, and they see an article. Hey, just thought you'd like to see this. A great content on how to, you know, polish your shoes, you know, nicely. Mm-hmm. You may want to read this and check it out. Oh, by the way, you want to like our page too? To see more great information like this, well, like our page now too. That sort of thing, where you're delivering comments. That's the Facebook tracking pixel. So it's like helps you increase your content and your reach with people who've been to your site, so you can help them and educate them and keep you and your business fresh in their mind.
That's good stuff. You know, and I want to send a special message to everyone listening to this podcast right now while they're driving in their car. Pay attention to the road and stop Googling the Facebook pixel tracker right now. Because I guarantee you 90% of the people are looking that up right now. So can we talk about building a team for a couple minutes? You seem to have pulled together some pretty awesome people, and you're doing some great stuff. I know you got the Strength Matters conference in San Diego coming up, I believe in March. And right now, if you're listening to this in the future, we are February of 2015. So I know you got just so many things happening, but you've seemed to assemble a great group of people that are buying into your vision and where you're going. And I know that tends to be a real tough thing for entrepreneurs to do is building a strong team. What could you tell us about what your approach has been?
I'd say the first thing is that when I first started off, I made a lot of mistakes when it came to building a team and everything and getting the right people on board. And I'll honestly admit that, you know, sometimes you choose friends who you want to do business with, which maybe not really the right thing. So the first thing and the most important thing I would say to anybody out there is, if you haven't got a mission statement, which is less than 7 words, if you haven't got a list of core values of less than, you know, I'd say 5 as a good number, you need to do them straight away right now before you think about hiring a team, pulling a team in, working with anybody, doing business with anybody. You need to get that mission statement and those core values written down immediately. Why? Because all of your hiring and firing decisions need to be based off the core values that you have defined for you and your company. Because I define my core values after maybe two and a half years into business. And it was great. I knew where they were. They've changed a couple of times over the last 18 months as the business has grown, but I'm now happy with where we are. But what you have is you start to make all your hiring and firing decisions based off those core values. Because what I did to begin with is I hired friends, I hired, got people on board who I thought were the right people. But then when I started having problems with them, I went back to my core values. And out of the 5, there were 3 of them, maybe they check off and they'd be fitting, but the other 2, not at all. They were the wrong people and the wrong fit for my core values. So you might be the right fit for you and your company as a person, but if they don't fit your core values, then everything else falls by the wayside, because they're never going to believe in the same mission and the same message that you have. So first and foremost, write down your core values. Now, our core values here at Strength Matters and Get Off Our Fever, you know, is number 1 is education. That's the first thing we do. Then number 2 is we deliver fun and an exceptional experience. Number 3 is humility. Number 4 is simplicity. And number 5 is passionate about health and fitness. I can use a specific example. I hired an admin staff and she was great. She was all fun with education. She, you know, helped deliver a lot of things, but she wasn't passionate about health and fitness. So she started causing all sorts of problems because she didn't understand what we were trying to do and how we were trying to do it. So we had to say goodbye to her. And she, because, you know, it was a 4 or 5 month, you know, headache for me. But if I'd have just based it on what to start with, I knew she wasn't interested in health and fitness. If I'd have hired a person who was from the start, it would have just created so much, like, my life easier. So the first thing, and I'll repeat it again, write down your purpose. What is your purpose? What is your mission statement in ideally less than 7 to 10 words? Then write down your 5 core values. Who do you stand for? And then when you're looking for people, you need to hire and fire. Hire fast, hire slow, fire fast, and base it on your core values. Does that make sense?
Totally, totally. Have you read Start With Why by Simon Sinek?
Yes, one of my favorite books ever. That was one of the first things I ever did a couple of years ago. I saw his TED Talk and I just, like, wow, that's absolutely brilliant. And I just went out and bought the book and read it cover to cover. It was just fantastic. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, your answer totally reminded me of that book and that TED Talk. So,
If you're talking about books, one of the best books that I did and learned about, you know, the purpose, core values, mission, and building like a simple, like, you know, your quarterly rocks and your business rocks. There's a book called Traction by Gina Wickman. Highly recommend that. If you haven't defined any core values, you haven't defined a mission statement, if you haven't got a simple one-page business plan or what you're going to do in the next 10 years, you need to buy the book by Traction by Gina Wickman. It's one of the best books and the best investment on Kindle I've ever paid.
Awesome. I'll make sure to put that in our notes. So as I kind of bring this home here over the next couple minutes, you know, I've asked you a bunch of questions. You've told your story. You seem really, really confident now in what you're doing, building your business. Was there ever a time that you weren't?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say I still am now at some point. You know, it's being an entrepreneur and being a small business owner, it's not easy. You always have the struggles and ups and downs, and you always tend to doubt yourself at the same time as well. Like, in the transition I'm doing at the moment and moving things forward, I there is that doubt and saying, look, okay, I know I'm on the right path. I think I'm on the right path, but what is that the right thing? Is it the right thing? So you always have the ums and ahs. So yeah, it's a tough one. There is, you know, you've got to be confident as an entrepreneur. Absolutely, 100%. But you always will have that doubt in the back of your mind sometimes, but just keep going through it. Like I said, you know, you're an entrepreneur and small business owner for a reason. If things don't fit with your core values, your purpose, then you need to make sure that they do, and then move on from there.
What kind of head trash do you deal with?
Good question. I'd say time. The problem I have is the bigger you get as a company, the more people want to contact you. So I'd say the biggest, like I say, I'd say the biggest head trash I'd have to deal with is managing my time. That's probably my biggest fault at the same time as well, is trying to manage my time with so many things going on. So, I always feel that I haven't done enough work or haven't done this, haven't done that. So that is probably the biggest trash talk I have, is like, there's always something to do. And like my girlfriend will always kill me as well, saying I always think like that. But it's true. It's that you always think, I haven't done enough today. I need to do more. And that's the stuff that you got to try and rein yourself back in sometimes, because if you keep working as hard as you are in your business, then sometimes you'll just go pop.
Yeah, you got to have that balance.
Absolutely.
You got to have that rest and recovery time.
Absolutely, totally. And it's a key thing. That's one of the biggest things for me. It's like, I'm passionate about my work and I'm passionate about my job, but sometimes I get too caught up in it. And then you lose your inspiration, you lose your inspiration, you lose your drive and your passion because you're working too hard on it. You need to have a couple of days and back off completely. Yeah. To get a fresh perspective and a fresh mind and start again.
All right. Well, I believe you're, about 9:30 p.m., 10:30 p.m. your time right now?
Yeah, it's about 9:30 now at the moment. Yeah.
9:30. So when we're done here in a few minutes, make sure you go to bed or have a cold beer and relax.
Absolutely. No more
working tonight.
Absolutely. That'd be me to my girlfriend's ears. Emily would absolutely love that thought as well. So it's that's exactly right. So like I said, the one thing we try and do now, and I struggle a little bit, is to say, look, cutoff point 10 p.m. Wind down, let's go to bed, because that's kind of been enforced by Emily as well, which is a good thing for me, because like I said, if I get caught up in something, I just want to keep on going and working, and suddenly you lose track of time, days of the week even sometimes. So it's important, you need to set times and say, look, what are your working hours? I start at whatever. For me, I like to get up early and start work early, but you need to have those defined hours set so you don't work past it, because you just will burn out.
Well, that's good stuff. So James, if people want to reach out to you, if they want to check out your products or any of your events and things like that, what are the best ways for them to do that?
Yeah, I'd say the best thing is, if people want to see what sort of content we're putting out on a regular basis now, you head over to strengthmatters.tv. That's a new website we've done that ties into our magazine that we publish now every month. So that's where we're now putting out daily content on there. It's about news, latest news and research on health and fitness. If you love health and fitness and see what we're doing along those lines, check out strengthmatters.tv, where you can see the content-based stuff that we're doing. If the people are interested in actually the events and courses we're doing, we've got a new website now, which is realstrengthmatters.com, where you can see the ideas and the workshops and certifications that we're starting to put together and really develop and roll out there. So those are the best places to get hold of me. Again, but if you want to reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter at Strength Matters, you can grab hold of us in there. You can grab us on Facebook. Strength Matters TV is another good place. So people can reach out, and if they've got any questions about business, I'm always happy. Even though health and fitness is my passion, I'm very passionate about health and fitness and the business and small business owners, because like I'm in there. It's a great hobby of mine as well as my career, so to speak. Now, so if anyone's got any questions, feel free to reach out to me anytime.
Great. Well, James, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Thank you for sharing a bit of your journey with us, and I had a blast talking with you. I could talk about this stuff all day, and I really appreciate how you've just been an open book with what you're doing, and I wish you the best. I've had a really good time here, man.
Thanks, Tom. Really appreciate it. Really, it's nice to be on the other end of the podcast, like I said. So I'm more than happy to come and do that. Like I said, it's all about sharing information, because that's what we're all about. It's about sharing and giving, the laws of reciprocity, the more you give, the more you'll get back eventually. So
that's right. All right, everybody. So take something that you heard today and apply it. Does you no good if it's just sitting around on the shelf doing nothing? Pick one thing that you feel is going to help your business be a little bit stronger today, put it into practice, and go ahead and put a bullet in mediocrity in your life and business today. And we'll see you next time on the Strongpreneur Podcast. Thanks again.